Ekantra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekantra AI. Welcome, everyone, to this deep dive. Today, we are wrestling with a title that's both super provocative and almost instantly legendary. Francis Fukuyama's The End of History and The Last Man.
Yeah, that book from 92, it was just this huge intellectual effort, wasn't it? Trying to make sense of that massive geopolitical shift that had just happened.
It absolutely captured the moment. You know, the Soviet Union collapsing, the Berlin Wall coming down. It wasn't just politics changing, it felt like. Mm-hmm. Like something had ended.
Right. And that title, it gets misunderstood all the time. He wasn't saying, you know, wars stop or events stop. No, not at all.
It was about ideology. Mankind's ideological evolution, he argued, had kind of reached its final point.
That's the core claim, isn't it? The big fight over how to organize society, democracy, fascism, communism. He basically said, look, that fight's over.
Liberal democracy and market capitalism won. Decisively. So our mission today is really to unpack this huge, powerful idea. It's been celebrated, sure, but also really heavily criticized.
And we need to explore why he insists the system is the final form, but also, just as importantly, get into his warning about the, well, the spiritual cost of getting there. Mm.
Okay, so to really grasp the claim, maybe we should start with Fukuyama himself. His background is pretty unique.
It really is. He's an American political scientist, a public intellectual, trained at Harvard, studied under some real heavyweights like Samuel Huntington. So he had this deep grounding in, you know, big geopolitical theory.
But crucially, he wasn't just locked away in an ivory tower, right?
Not at all. He had real hands-on government policy experience. He was at the Rand Corporation, worked in the State Department under the first Bush administration.
And that mix.
Yeah.
The deep philosophy plus the practical policy experience.
Yeah.
That's kind of what makes his perspective so compelling, I think.
Definitely. And what really makes him stand out, intellectually speaking, is where he draws his ideas from. He doesn't just focus on economics or military stuff like so many analysts do.
He goes way back, doesn't he?
Yeah, he brings back this grand tradition of German idealist philosophy, traces his thinking through Alexandre Kojève, the French interpreter from the 20th century, and then straight back to Hegel. GWF Hegel.
Wow. That's key. Because he's arguing that ideas matter, and specifically this deep human psychological need for dignity, for recognition, what he calls themos. That's the real engine of history.
Exactly. It's not just about material stuff, like Marx might argue. It's this non-material drive. It's philosophy with a capital P really coming back into political science.
And the book itself grew out of that incredibly influential essay he published in 89, The End of History.
Right. Literally just months before the Berlin Wall fell and everything started changing so fast in Eastern Europe. Talk about timing.
Okay, so let's get into that central thesis then. He's arguing for something called universal history.
Uh-huh. The idea that human society isn't just like one random thing after another. It's actually going somewhere. There's a direction, a coherent evolution.
And that destination, the end point, is
Western liberal democracy paired with a market-based economy. That's the finish line.
For Fukuyama, you know, fascism collapsing earlier and then communism finally giving way, It basically proved that liberal democracy was the only game left in town, the only philosophically sound, globally appealing system.
And he's saying this wasn't just luck, it's the logical outcome of historical forces.
Wait.
And the book tries to show this by identifying these two main drivers, these motors pushing societies in that direction.
Okay, motor number one, the material engine. This one feels maybe a bit easier to grasp. It's about modern science and technology.
Yeah. Basically, science is cumulative. It builds on itself. It moves forward. And if you fall behind technologically, well, you can't compete militarily or economically.
Right. So this pressure forces societies towards systems that are efficient, good at handling information, which he says points towards market capitalism.
Because centrally planned economies, they just can't cope with that level of technological complexity and innovation. They stifle it.
Okay, so that's the material pressure. But you said there were two motors.
Yes. And the second one is the really crucial one for Fukuyama. It's the fundamental engine, the non-material one. The struggle for recognition. This is where the philosophy really kicks in.
Thymos. That's the term.
Yes, thymos. He argues we humans aren't just, you know, calculating machines, maximizing utility. We have this deep craving to have our worth, our dignity recognized by others.
So history isn't just about economics. It's about this psychological struggle.
Precisely. It's the long, often messy story of societies trying different ways to satisfy this fundamental need for recognition.
But, and this is important, the book doesn't just end with a yay, we won kind of message.
No, absolutely not. It gets quite dark, actually. It raises these deep worries about what happens after the ideological battles are over. He brings in Nietzsche and the idea of the last man.
Yeah, that warning about this spiritual cost of success. We definitely need to keep that ambivalence in mind as we go through the book's structure.
Okay, so let's break it down. The book has five main parts. Part one is called An Old Question Asked Anew.
Right. And here he's dealing with the pessimism that was so strong in the mid-20th century. You know, after the world wars, totalitarianism,
Yeah.
the whole idea of human progress seemed kind of naive, even dangerous.
Totally. Fukuyama acknowledges all that horror, but he says, look, the collapse of Soviet communism, so sudden, mostly peaceful, it forces us to revisit that old Hegelian question.
Is there a pattern? Is there some underlying logic to history, even with all the chaos?
And he argues, yes, there is. We just needed the dust of the 20th century to settle to see it clearly again.
Okay, then part two, the old age of mankind. This is where he really lays out that material engine argument we touched on.
Science drives modernization. You have to industrialize to defend yourself, to feed your population. It creates this pressure towards similar economic structures, similar bureaucracies everywhere. Kind of paves the way for a global consumer culture, you could say.
But that only explains why societies might get richer or more organized, maybe.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite explain why they choose democracy, does it? Anyway,
Huh?
couldn't you have a very efficient authoritarian state?
Exactly. And that's why part three, the struggle for recognition, is so critical. This is where he makes his truly original argument, relying heavily on that concept of thymos.
This is the Hegel master-slave part, right?
Yeah, he uses that famous dialectic. Two consciousnesses meet, each demands recognition. The one willing to risk death wins mastery, the other submits to preserve life, becoming the slave.
But it's an unstable setup.
Totally unstable. The master gets recognition, but it's from a slave, someone he doesn't respect, so it's ultimately unsatisfying. And the slave, through work, starts to develop a sense of self-worth.
So, for Fukuyama, historical conflict, wars, revolutions, fights for rights, it's all driven by this flawed, unequal recognition. Groups feeling their dignity is denied.
That's the engine. People demanding their thymos be acknowledged. And he actually breaks thymos down a bit further, which is helpful.
Oh, yeah.
He talks about isothymia, the desire to be recognized as equal to others, and megalothymia, the desire to be recognized as superior, the drive for greatness, for distinction.
Ah, okay. So history is pushed along by both the demand for equality and the desire to be exceptional.
Right. And that distinction becomes really important when we get to part four, Leaping Over Roads, which is about the final resolution.
It's where liberal democracy comes in as the solution.
Yes. He argues it's the system that finally solves that master-slave contradiction, that satisfies thymos in a stable way,
How so?
because it establishes universal and reciprocal recognition. Everyone, at least in principle, is recognized as free and equal under the law. Your rights are acknowledged, my rights are acknowledged. It satisfies that isothymia, that need for equal respect.
The reciprocity is key, isn't it? I recognize you because you recognize me.
Exactly. And it transcends the flawed systems of the past. Aristocracy denied recognition based on birth, fascism on race, communism on class. Liberal democracy, theoretically, provides a rational, stable framework for recognition. That's why he thinks it has no serious ideological competitors left.
Okay, makes sense.
Okay.
But then we hit part V, the last man. This is the big warning sign.
This is where he brings in Nietzsche, who was deeply disturbed by the prospect of a comfortable democratic future.
Nietzsche feared it would create mediocrity.
Worse than mediocrity, almost, the last man, this creature who is totally focused on personal safety, comfort, material well-being, secure, yes, but tame, having lost any desire for greatness, any willingness to risk life for a higher cause, no megalothemia left.
Just comfortable consumers.
Pretty much, and Fukuyama takes this seriously. He wonders if liberal democracy satisfies the need for equal recognition, isothymia, so well, what happens to the desire for superior recognition, megalothemia? Does it just vanish?
Or does it curdle? Find other outlets.
That's the worry. If there are no great political struggles left, no noble causes to fight for because everything is, rational and settled, will people become so bored, so spiritually empty?
That they might actually want struggle again, even irrational struggle.
Yeah. He speculates that this void could lead people to actively seek conflict, danger, maybe even tear down the stable democratic order just to feel alive, to feel noble or passionate again, even if it's destructive.
Wow. So the very success of the system creates the potential for its own undermining. That's quite a paradox.
It absolutely is. And that tension really captures the core themes of the book.
Okay, let's try and summarize those key themes then. First one has to be directionality, right?
Definitely. History isn't random. It's moving towards something. It's teleological. That's a huge philosophical claim against, you know, postmodern ideas of history as just chaos.
And second, and maybe his most distinctive point, the primacy of Timos.
Yeah, arguing that this psychological need for recognition, for dignity, is actually more fundamental in driving history than pure economics. Think about nationalism, identity politics.
Right, things that purely materialist theories struggle to explain. They're often about dignity, aren't they?
Exactly. Third theme flowing from that, the contradiction of authoritarianism.
Because recognition only really counts if it comes from an equal.
Right, the master-slave dynamic is inherently unstable. Coerced recognition doesn't satisfy Thymos, so authoritarian systems eventually crumble under the pressure for real dignity.
And the fourth theme, the big one we just discussed, spiritual ambivalence.
The warning. The triumph of the best system might paradoxically lead to a society of comfortable but ultimately empty last men.
Yeah, lacking that spark, that drive for something more.
Okay, the book is just full of these really memorable lines or concepts that kind of crystallize the arguments. We should probably highlight a few.
Good idea. What stands out?
Well, first, just the core thesis itself, maybe paraphrased a bit. The end of history is the end point of ideological evolution, the universalization of Western liberal democracy as the final form of government.
That's the headline, basically.
Yeah.
Then what about Thymos?
Yeah, something like, for Hegel, the desire for recognition is the most human of all desires. It is the desire for recognition that is the primary motor of history, puts psychology front and center.
Okay. And the warning,
yeah.
The last man.
The description is pretty stark. The last man at the end of history is a creature who has been tamed, concerned above all with his own personal safety and comfort, and has no desire to risk his life for any higher cause. Chilling, really.
So thinking about today, 30-odd years after the book came out, how do these ideas apply? Do they still hold up?
I think they offer a really potent lens for looking at, well, a lot of the political discontent we see around the world.
Like a rise of populism, nationalism, yeah. That sort of thing.
Exactly. You can look at movements like, you know, Trumpism, Brexit, various nationalist surges in Europe, and interpret them not just as economic complaints, though that's part of it.
But more as a thymotic rebellion, a demand for recognition.
Precisely. A rebellion against maybe feeling ignored, dismissed by a globalized, rational, elite liberal order. It's like people are shouting, we're not just consumers. Our identity, our dignity, our group matters. It's a demand for thymos, maybe even megalithemia, finding expression.
A search for a cause, a flag, a struggle, maybe to escape that feeling of being the last man.
Could be. It certainly resonates. And on a personal level, too, the book makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah, it forces you to ask yourself,
yeah.
Is a life focused mainly on security and comfort?
Mm.
Is that actually enough? Or do we need some kind of struggle, some challenge, some higher purpose to feel truly fulfilled?
Where do you, the listener, find that meaning beyond just the everyday comforts that liberal democracy provides so well? Profound question.
So if we try to connect all this, maybe the biggest takeaway is that we really need to look beyond just the material explanations for things.
I think so. Ideas matter. Psychology matters. This deep human need for dignity, for thymos, it genuinely shapes history in ways that, you know, economic charts alone just can't capture.
And the ultimate insight is that paradox we keep coming back to. Liberal democracy might be the most just, most rational system.
But its very success might breed this crisis of meaning, this potential for the passionless last man.
Leaving us with that question, can we have peace and prosperity without sacrificing greatness, without losing that vital spark?
And that tension between the rational order and the potentially irrational needs of the human spirit, that's still one of the central challenges of our time, isn't it? How do we find meaningful struggle without tearing down the stability we've achieved?
A really powerful thought to leave people with.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.